Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Drake.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Here we go.
All right. Yes, sir. Welcome to another amazing edition of Talking Sports 12th Man. We had a slight hiatus last week because, international, worldwide, Robert Ford is taking trips, but we are back. JQ was crazy busy. Apparently, the world can't function without him, so we had a nice little cessation. But we are officially back. Gentlemen, I'm actually excited to say we have a sponsor. This show is sponsored by asparagus, which is often referred to as the royalty of vegetables. It has been cherished throughout its history for its unique flavor, nutritional benefits, and its culinary versatility. It serves as a symbol of health, vitality, and a vibrant lifestyle. So that is. We want to, again, join us in celebrating the wonders of this remarkable vegetable as we are focused and sponsored by the American or Asparagus Farmers Association. So thank you very much.
The real superfood.
And we beat them now. We got a sponsor now.
I was like, wow.
Man, how many years it took us to get there?
Let's
go around the horn and check with the fellas. JQ, I know you sounds like you're driving, man. How you doing this evening, sir?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I am. I'm almost at the house. I didn't know we were sponsored by this green giant now. Okay. I'll take it, though. Yeah, life has just been crazy, but glad to be back. Talk to y'all.
Yes. Rob Ford. What's going on, my guy?
Hey, man. Glad we're back together again tonight and ready to get this party started, man. We're ready to make it do what it do. Got a little nap in tonight, so I feel refreshed and recharged.
Wow, you sounded good after that. That was. Now, you must have had some asparagus tonight.
I didn't have any tonight. I had some lunch today, man. I had some salmon and some asparagus for lunch today, so got it in. It's important.
Good enough.
Man, that man brought me some life. I've never heard him come on here and say, you know what, I had a big mac. You know, I had some salmon and asparagus. I had some croquettes. And Rob will never be bullshit. Boy, his is going to be excellent all the time.
Get out of here.
He is a foodie, so it's going to be fun. So good stuff. Last but not least, steakhouse asparagus, whatever. I love it. Let's say Gary, who is apparently smart enough not to wrestle with grizzly bears and whatnot. So, Gary, we turn the floor to you, my guy.
Well, I'm in St. Regis, Montana. And we're at an RV resort, and the couple that owns this, they manage it, it's the Nugget RV Resort, so I wanted to plug this place. Very nice couple, young couple. I love to see, people doing what they want to do and loving what they do, and these people do, so I'm grateful that we were here. We're going to be here for a couple of nights, so... We're going to do a little golf, a little pickleball.
Okay.
And we're going to have fun.
So Life of a retiree. Good job, Gary. Thank you for, again, giving us hope and for showing us how it's done. So without further ado, we have a lot of things to discuss for sure. So we're going to dive right in, as we always do, really quickly throw out the numbers. Always call me, boys. It's the same number as always. Always, always call in. We got the 424-243-9519. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And last but not least, Facebook.com/TalkingSports12Man or 12 Man Sports. We are there as well. So, gentlemen, right out the gate, we're going to talk about some OTA information. And it's a good sight, you know, maybe for some to see, you know, DeMar Hamlin out there participating in team drill. And, yeah, so just after that scary situation to see him back, it's you know, short of a miracle, man. So let's go around the horn and talk about that. So, Rob, what are your thoughts about that right out the gate?
Oh, yeah, you know, it's great to see, of course, that he's back to 100% health. A little scary, though, you know, something like that happens to a player. You know, my initial thoughts were like, man, I don't think he should play football again, you know.
Right.
But obviously, medically, you know, a lot of doctors have approved him to come back and play, and he's safe to come back and play. But, you know, initially, like I said, for me, when it happened, I was like, wow, you know, it's not that important. You know? Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
Hey, as long as he's medically clear and they've checked all the boxes and that he's safe to play, is definitely a great story. And you're rooting for the kid. Obviously, most importantly, you're rooting for him to stay healthy and, you know, to be able to, you know, to have a great life ahead of him, and that's what's most important. But like I said, when it happened, I was like, wow, I don't think he should play again. But obviously, medically, he's been cleared, and it turned out to be a great story.
Yeah. So as somebody that was at the stadium when it happened during the game, and I've had this conversation with other friends, I was like, there's no chance that they should clear him to play again. And I know it's messed up. He's played football his whole life. This is his dream. But, man, you did that. They brought you back off the field. The NFL should walk him around for Roger Goodell and let him be an ambassador for the NFL. I just don't want to see him play football again because, yes, I know he got medically cleared, but, man, if anything halfway wrong happens to him, the very next thing is, well, who cleared it? Why is he playing? Like, I just don't want that for him. And it's not because of any Bills, Bengals type stuff. It's just, man, I just wish they would let him be a spokesperson for the NFL and give him a nice salary and let him go across the country and across the world and promote the brand for the NFL. But I really don't want him to play another down. But I get it. You know, he's a football player, and it's what he does. It's what he wants to do. Like you say, he's been cleared. I just... being in that stadium when that happened, it's hard for me to see him out there. And, I'm glad I'm not a Bills fan because you almost have to hold your breath when he's involved in a play right now. So, good on him for doing what he wants to do and all that. But just me personally, I think I have a different feeling about it because I was there. I for sure didn't want that dude to play again. I didn't.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I would say is, I was really curious – to hear what JQ had to say, knowing what we know, that he was there during that point. And I'm hoping that what the NFL, whatever tests and whatever things that they put him through to determine that they took his passion for the game out of it, and it was just physical, it was just a, you know, yes, we've done all these tests. They've all shown up negative. You've done everything, so you're, you know, able to play. I mean, you go from a near-death experience like he did to, you know, being out there at this point in time right now is one thing. But to be out there week one, full contact. Other teams taking your head off, you know. That's what these players are taught from day one. Let's knock that guy on his ass. So with that said, that's what I'm concerned with. I hope that this was just a kind of a one-off thing, and he has a long career, and I wish him the best. But I'll be holding my breath, you know, those first few moments, and to see how he reacts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I definitely kind of agree with both of you.
That's fine.
Yeah, go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, right, I'm fine. No, go ahead.
No. Well, I was just going to just say just it's just tough because, you know, I definitely agree with everyone, you know, definitely with you, Robin, and you, everyone, just because, you know, whenever we used to play sports, and sometimes you have to protect the player from himself, right? So there's some situations where you want to go in, you're like, no, you know, you really need to, like, not go in, you know, because this is, no matter how bad you want, it's like sometimes there's situations where as a coach you have to say, hey, this is not good for you to go back in. And like you said, even though you may have a love for the game, it's like it is kind of – whenever I was watching the highlights, and he was all excited, but, you know, that's one half of it. But you are scared if he does take a hit, and then, like, what if something even more – like you said, you already got – what if something even more tragic happened and you could have prevented it? So I think that's the situation where – you know, I don't know. It's like you kind of hope it's like, hey, he's out there, and hey, you know, like you said, maybe he's back. I don't know if he's actually going to play, but it's just you're definitely playing with fire in this instance too. And somebody, I think, whether it's the Bill staff or somebody, you got to protect that guy from himself, I think. So, you know, that's what I would say. I don't know if you had anything else to wrap up with that, JQ.
Well, the thing about it too, we also understand, I believe he was playing in that game because Jordan Poirier was hurt. He was the backup, so he's not projected really to be a starter, right? If the Bills have their troubles and everybody's back and healthy, then he's going to play probably some special teams, and they're trying to get rid of all the contact on special teams anyway. It's just hard, you know, to see him out there given what he went through. And I get it, though, like, you know, this is what he wanted to do. This is how he had planned to, you know, feed his family, and that was his passion, his pursuit, so I don't want to hold him back from that on my own selfishness of I don't want to see anything happen to you. It's just hard is that I feel like he was such – him being back and being around and whatnot, like he could have just done a lot more, I think, for instead of being a special team player and a backup safety. I feel like he could have just done too much more for the NFL, being out front in terms of the defibrillators and everything else around stadiums, you know, being at that part of the NFL. But then you have to tell that dude he can't play when people are medically clearing him to play. So – like they're in a trick spot with it because they've never had to deal with anything like that. There's no playbook for this. Like, how do you come back from this and do it successfully because you never had to deal with it before? So I get where they are. They're just in a rock and a hard place. Like, if he's basically cleared, you can't tell that dude he can't play. It's just that I just didn't necessarily want to see it, but I can't tell a grown man what to do with his life and what he wants to do for his profession. So, you know, I'm rooting for him to be healthy and to be a success as much as I can because, you know, I want the Bengals to win, of course, but, you know, I just don't want to see anything bad happen to them.
Good stuff. Moving on from that topic here, let's talk about, you know, NFC South Division. We've got Bucks. Tristan Wirfs is actually determined to excel at left tackle. He was an elite right tackle, and obviously what's happening with the Bucks moving on from Donovan Smith, and now Tristan's going to take that position. And like you said, let's see how that plays out. What are your thoughts on that, Rob? You know, you're trying to make that move.
Well, you know, Tristan Wirfs has been one of the best. Tristan Wirfs has been one of the best right tackles. Tristan Wirfs has been one of the best right tackles in the game since his rookie season. I mean, he's been extremely well. I think he was 14th overall pick in his draft that year. Came out. Like I said, he's been one of the best right tackles in the game, protecting Tom Brady over the last few years. And, you know, listening to sports talk radio in Tampa a lot, obviously the fans there were really hoping for them to draft a left tackle as opposed to moving Tristan Wirfs because he was just so comfortable on the right side. But I firmly believe, you know, I don't know if he'll be a top two or three left tackle in the game, but I think he could definitely be a top 10 left tackle in the game moving over to the left side. He's just extremely athletic. He's got good arm extension, good range, good footwork. So I think he definitely will, you know, transition over to the left side extremely well. And like I said, a lot of fans were hoping that they would draft the left tackle in the first round. They drafted a defensive tackle, Kalijah Kancey from Pittsburgh. in the first round. They did draft Cody Mock in the second round, who's kind of one of those guys that's a tweener that can play guard or tackle, but you really don't project him to be a left tackle. So maybe he can be the guy that takes over on the right side for Tristan Wirfs, or you play Cody at the guard position. So they didn't really draft a bona fide left tackle in this draft like a lot of the fans thought they should do. But I think, you know, having Tristan Wirfs in the building, they had that flexibility to draft who they deemed was the best player available. So I think he's going to transition well over there. He seems to be pretty confident in learning the position. Obviously, you know, right now if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, your main concern is the quarterback position right now. And and while most people are predicting him to be last in the NFC South, there's still some talent on that football team when you look at the receiver position, when you look at the running back position, and also you look at the defense. There's some weapons on there. They don't have a lot of depth in the secondary right now, so that could be a concern. The quarterback position and a little bit on the offensive line are their concerns, but there's still some talent on that team. But ultimately, the quarterback position is the reason why most prognosticators, including us, and I think we did our NFC South predictions a few weeks ago, I think we all had the Bucs finishing last as well.
You did last. Dead last. Listen, they need to worry about, like you said, you touched on it, but you didn't get to it. They need to worry about Trask and Mayfield's ass. Listen, he can give them all the protection in the world, but their quarterback situation sucks. And, again, of course, Tristan's going to say that because left tackles make more money than right tackles. So if he wants to move to left tackle, get that paycheck. He had the same problem that Jonah Williams has in Cincinnati. He didn't want to get moved over because he knows he won't get the bag, even if he shouldn't get it anyway. But for comparison's sake, that's why you have that conversation of right tackle versus left tackle. But they're going to be hot. They're going to be a hot mess anyway. But the thing about it is they're going to give – Baker Mayfield's going to give you some of those Baker Mayfield games because he's got really good wide receivers, like you just said. But then he's going to give you those other Baker Mayfield games. And they're going to end up 7-10, somewhere in there like that. And just enough to tease you and make you mad. He's going to – listen, he's got talent. He's got talent around him, right? Like he's like Rob just said, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, like he's got two studs at wide receiver. So if he can get together and wake up on the right side of the bed, he could go out there and have a good game because he's got good talent around him at the wide receiver.
Well, you know, this guy's a two-time All-Pro, you know, but not every right tackle can make that type of a jump, you know, over to left tackle. And that's why you don't see that a lot. But I will say that this guy will be that guy that is able to. You know, they were you talk about the footwork. It's just the opposite footwork on those sides. Yeah. So you've got that's what he's got to be concentrating on is retraining his mind, that first initial step and those steps around him to protect that that quarterback. And this quarterback, like you've touched on, JQ, is this quarterback is depending on having that guy at that left tackle spot. So this was the right move for them because he's going to need all the time in the world because he's not that quarterback that can just, you know, he's going to have protection to make the throws.
Yeah, and I think one thing for sure, Donovan Smith really struggled last year at the left tackle position for Tampa. So I mean, on paper, you think it's going to be a clear upgrade for them at the left tackle position, but can they replace Wirfs on the right side? We'll have to wait and see. Cody Mark is that guy. Who's that guy that's going to take over on the right side? But so, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But definitely for sure, Donovan Smith really struggling. That's why he's no longer with the team anymore at the left tackle position.
And you have to understand when you draft a tackle that early in the first round, mid-first round, I think the plan was always to move him to left tackle at some point because they're in the building with Donovan Smith, right? So they're like, this is working for right now. But we drafted this dude at this point to move him to left tackle at some point because nobody drafts a right tackle, really, at this point in the game, the way it goes in the NFL in the first round. So you got to understand, I think that was part of the long-term vision for him anyway.
Yeah, I know the Bucs are really high. They hire Rashard White, running back from Arizona State. You know, he kind of was in the he was sharing carries with Leonard Fournette last year. They got rid of Leonard Fournette. That, so they got a Rashard White. He's the clear number one guy at the running back position. They're really high on him, too. So, I mean, they have some weapons, as JQ just mentioned, too, at wide receiver position. They like Rashard White. Still is the big question mark. The big question mark is at the quarterback position. They still have some interior offensive. They even have some other offensive line concerns on the interior. The tight end position, too, is a concern. So that's where the question marks are.
I hope they go 3-14, personally. I hope they go 3-14. I was down there for that Bengals-Bucks game. They was out of control when they had Tom Brady. I hope they are terrible. I do. I hope it. I'm sorry, Lord, for speaking ill will, but I hope they suck.
I hope they suck, too, man.
I agree with you.
Seriously.
I agree with you. I think Arizona might be the worst team in the league, but Tampa Bay could be right up there, too.
But I don't need them to be that bad because I don't want them to get a good quarterback. I want them to mess around and get some wins that they shouldn't get so they can't get a good quarterback this year. I want them to be in perpetual purgatory.
Purgatory.
I said it.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Tristan did play left tackle for like 3 games in Iowa, so just a little, you know, but that was like, you know, such a long time ago. But it was just like you said, he was just so dominant at the right tackle, too. So it's kind of like, you know, why make the switch? But as you said, you know, like you said, it's, you know, he has the capabilities of making those moves, and he's been practicing, like you said. It's just like he's like learning like different moves. Like you said, Gary, you're, everything is opposite. So he's putting in work in. So we'll see what happens. But again, we don't care. We hope you suck, Bucks. All right, let's move on here. For Gary.
Sucking ears.
Mike McCarthy wanted more offensive responsibilities, Gary. What say you on that front?
JQ, knock it off. This is what I'll say about that. Last year, you know, the last couple of years, apparently, he had a real riff with the play calling of, you know, Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore's moved on. You know, if you look on paper, you know, 2-12 and back-to-back 12-5 seasons, that's good. But he wasn't the offensive coordinator during those times. Mm-hmm. But what I was thinking when he said that, you know, for the last couple of years, you've had issues with the offensive coordinator. If that were Jimmy Johnson, and he had a problem with Norv Turner, he didn't like his play calls or whatever. He's going to say, from now on, that's my job. You go set up in the booth, and you know you can talk to me, but I'm doing the thing. You know, he should be a head coach enough to say, hey, listen. You know, I'm taking that responsibility away from you. I don't like how things are going. Don't just, after he's gone, come up with this and say, well, I've had issues with him. And so, you know, this is why this happened. He's gone. McCarthy's in there. I have a question mark there with McCarthy because it just didn't seem like the simplest things like time management and these sort of things were big on his agenda. So
absolutely.
To me, that would lead me to believe that maybe if you know, timeouts are an issue, play calling every damn offensive play could be even more of an issue. Somehow he muddled through with a great quarterback, as temperamental as he was, but with a great quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. But then there were some problems there. He went away. Now we've got him. The jury's out with him. If he can make this transition, and they've got a lot of weapons, they've got a lot of talent. There should be zero excuse why he can't do the job, other than the fact that maybe it's just too much for him. Jury's out for me.
Uh-oh. Listen, you touched on it, but you didn't go far enough. You started to go there with it. Bro, you are the head coach. You are in the building with him, going through the scripts, the game plan, this, that, and the other. If you felt that way by game 4, 6, y'all are supposed to meet no press conference about it, no talking about it. Me and you, hey, man, I need to talk to you. What you're doing in the fourth quarter and two-minute drill are, in this situation, I don't like. Let's review what you're talking about doing this week. Nope, that's not going to work. You do realize we got Dak and this is everything else. Let's not do this. Like, what are you doing? You're the head coach. You can't be such a CEO and remove yourself so far away from it that you don't step into that situation and say, hey, bro, hey, this part of it, like, I like you for 85% of the game, but this 50% is killing us, and I'm going to refine it with you. We're going to work on this. That's your job. How do you, like you said, how do you let him go and then start talking trash about it after he's left? Bro, you could have taken over any time you felt like. But you know why he didn't? Because he wasn't confident enough in it to take over. Because if he takes over and it goes from bad to worse, now it's like, well, I didn't call these plays. Such and such called these plays. And the whispers started to come out that McCarthy's messing around with the game plan. That's why we're messing up. So, yeah, you can't have it both ways, bro. You didn't want to have that responsibility, and that's okay because that's why you hired Kellen Moore. But don't trash him when it's over, when you could have got in there and taken over if you had wanted to. So, yeah, I'm with you, Gary. That's real weak. That's real weak on Mike McCarthy's part to say that out loud to anybody. You just got to hold that to yourself and say, okay, from here moving forward, I won't let that be a thing anymore. I'm going to live or die with my gut feeling. But don't trash that dude when he ain't there no more, when you could have made a difference when he was there. Come on now.
Yep.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And definitely agree with that. But I definitely agree with to Gary's point. He hasn't proven to be a great game manager in order to be a play. Now, don't get it twisted. Mike McCarthy has a great track record as a play caller, as an offensive coordinator. But, you know, he just hasn't shown it as a head coach. And you know, he hasn't proven that he can be a great game manager or a great, clock manager, et cetera. So that's the concern with him taking over the play call. And can he handle both of those responsibilities when he couldn't handle managing the team overall?
Timeout.
So that's a huge concern. The timeouts, the clock management, et cetera. It's you supposed to be have full control over every area of that organization we out on the field, and that's been a huge concern since he's been a head coach there in Dallas. So, you know, I would be if I was a Cowboy fan. Let me make it clear, I'm not. But but if I was, I would be concerned about him taking over that responsibility as well.
Well, this is the only thing I would say on that.
And let's face it, the Cowboys on paper could be NFC title contender, right? You know, on paper they have it. They have a roster.
This is what I would say on this, Rob. I would say I would have a new position in Dallas, and it would be a timeout coordinator. And I would be walking around right by Mike McCarthy. I'll take the job myself.
Correct.
Coach McCarthy, it's time for a timeout.
Like a give back coach?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, timeout. Oh, great job. McCarthy's really calling those timeouts good now. But that's what I would do. I'd hire someone, hey, just in his ear, hey, what do you think about a timeout right now? You know, hello?
Come on, man.
Because we've seen him mess that shit up.
You said they were an NFC contender? So would you put your money on them beating the Eagles or the 49ers to go to the Super Bowl?
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say they're a favorite. No, not
at
all.
49ers and Eagles, yes.
You would not.
What I'm basically saying is if something goes wrong one way or another with the Eagles or the 49ers, I mean, they're right up there in the top five as far as talented teams in the NFC. There's no question about
that. So you are emergency.
Miami Heat in the NBA Finals as an 8 seed. So, well, basically, you know, Giannis got hurt with the Bucks, that's basically what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're the favorite. No, not at all. I still think the Eagles are the favorite in that seed, point blank.
So they're the contenders in emergency plan purposes.
But they are on paper. They're top five.
Rob,
hanging out with
Keyshawn Johnson.
When you look at the NFC right now, I mean, how many elite quarterbacks you have in that conference right now? So on paper,
San Francisco don't have an elite quarterback, but they're still a favorite over Dallas. They don't have an elite quarterback. I don't want to get into Dallas bashing, so I'm not doing that too much for Gary. I'm just saying there's tiers, and San Francisco and Philadelphia are on another tier, to me, than Dallas is in the NFC. But you're right. The NFC just doesn't have a whole bunch of dudes that you look at and say, man, they're going to be really strong. Dallas is probably – they're probably third behind San Francisco and Philadelphia.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, I did, like I said, I said a contender. I didn't say they were favorite.
We gotta redefine this word contender. That's all I'm saying.
Well, if that's the case, then the Bengals are not contenders either, because they're the third best team in the AFC.
But the Bengals went to the championship game and to the Super Bowl in the past 2 years, neither of which of Dallas has done. So let's not make that a comparison.
I'm talking about the AFC now. And in the AFC, what I'm talking about is, if that analogy is good for the Cowboys, and I totally agree with it, then that analogy should also be good in the AFC as well. And if it is, the Bengals are not contenders.
And this is where your argument is flawed, because the Kansas City is a prohibitive favorite in the AFC. Who did the Bengals beat to go to the Super Bowl 2 years ago in Kansas City? Right. And they lost by a field goal this past year. So they've gotten to the precipice, the doorstep, one time and got through the door one the other time. When is the last time the Cowboys got through the door?
It's been a long time, but
they
have got through the door. They've not through the door. How long is it going to take your team to get 5 Super Bowls? Let's say just to get one.
Yeah, that's fine. But that's VHS tape.
I'm talking about right now.
Let's not go back to the 90s. Let's talk about right now.
Right now, both of those teams are in the conversation, but they're not the teams to beat in either conference.
Dallas is only in the conversation because their name is Dallas.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
That's the only reason. Why can't we have an honest conversation about it? No, if the Cowboys were that team, I would come in here and say, man, the Cowboys, you got to put them as the third team on the same tier. All I'm saying is that I just don't think the Cowboys, as currently constructed, are a for real contender unless other bad things happen to San Francisco and Philadelphia. I think Cincinnati, fully healthy, with Kansas City fully healthy,
and
Buffalo fully
healthy.
And in the NFC, you think the favorite is
Philadelphia, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And in the last 5 years, let's go over the record of Philadelphia versus Dallas, including last year. They were 500 team against the Cowboys. They split. Dallas. And then 2 years prior to that, Dallas took both games. 2 years before that, Dallas took both games. So they're a division rival, and in those games, as division rivals, as you well know, anything can happen.
Yes, it can. But you know what ain't going to happen? Dallas going to the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Let's not do that.
We'll be watching the Super Bowl again, and I'm inviting all Bengals fans over to my party. The Super Bowl party. All one of them.
I tell you, JQ is siding with Stephen A. Smith. Will go wrong. What does Stephen A. Smith say about the Cowboys? What can go wrong? Will go wrong for the Cowboys?
Will go wrong.
But see, this is the crazy thing. This is the crazy argument, because we were saying the whole reason about was we were talking about Mike McCarthy and his decision-making and his game management, and that's why that elite level. So it's kind of like it goes back to the coach, right? We've actually played this out. So that's the whole purpose of why we're here. I'm sorry. I'm the voice today. I'm not going to bash either. But
yeah.
The only thing I'll go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I think the point I was really trying to make here is that if Mike McCarthy do not succeed this year, you know, you really have to think about him getting fired, because if you look at that roster, they are talented enough. They are talented enough. You look at the playmakers they have on the defensive side of the ball. They made a big trade to get a corner. They made a big trade to get a wide receiver on that team. So when you look at the roster, I mean, how many years you've had Dak Prescott as your quarterback now? You add another weapon on that offense to go with CeeDee Lamb. So, I mean, if they're not successful, I mean, I guess we have to determine what's successful for the Cowboys this season. Because, you know, but if they're not successful, you really have to make a case for Mike McCarthy possibly getting fired, because I think they put some pieces together to where on paper they are a talented team.
Hold on, JK. Yeah, we've nailed it. Hold on, Cindy. It's 807-808-9239. Can we text it to you?
No. No, okay.
Got it. Okay, cool. 807.
Yeah. We all had those brain farts, JP.
Yeah, Wow, yeah.
It's okay. The last thing I'm going to say on this topic, because this is very fascinating to me, is that I go back to 2005, whenever Mike McCarthy was the offensive coordinator for the 49ers, and they drafted Alex Smith over Aaron Rodgers. That set the chain, and then anyone can look like a genius whenever you're coaching Aaron Rodgers for the Packers, too.
Man, what was that?
Probably me joining. I didn't hit join audio with the computer, but it did it. It's because Gary was talking that shit, so.
Oh, boy, Gary's getting a lot of heat tonight. It's all good, but that's all I'm going to say. Hey, really
I'm
quickly,
just joking.
As we,
Gary knows I love him.
Yeah. Hey, this is literally, we spent like 50 minutes talking about Cowboys, man. I'm sure Gary's happy. I think he did it on purpose, I think. So, you know, we'll see.
It was Rob. Rob did that shit. Come on, contender. Rob did that. I blame Rob.
Hey, you did not hear me say they were the favorite. A contender basically means they're up there in the top five in their conference.
I'm just joking.
I'm almost – I
can't hear you anymore, Gary.
I'm going to go to the next top.
I can't hear you, Gary.
Muted, Gary.
I can't hear you.
Hold on. I got to get back. He dropped. Sorry. Gary, you back?
Yep, I'm here now. I'm here.
So why it just drops? You know, even Blog Talk Radio doesn't like
you,
the Cowboys. It drops.
You know why it dropped. You know why it dropped. You just don't want to say it out loud. Oh.
What happened?
He's not saying anything. He's doing it on purpose.
Yeah, I can
he's doing it on purpose right now. I know you're doing it on purpose.
Okay. I know, every time we talked about the Lakers, he gets dropped off too. Huh?
This is hilarious. Oh, man. Can we really quickly talk about a couple things here? Because I want to get to there's a couple things I do want to talk. I want to chat really quickly about the finals really quickly. You know, just a quick note about the Bills. You know, they're in the mix for DeAndre Hopkins. Cowboys, again, aren't likely going to pursue. Gary, you can talk about that because they're talking about bringing back Ezekiel too, so they're not looking at that. So there you go, my guy. Just keep it going, man. Go ahead.
Well, we're still talking about the Cowboys, which is a good thing. Maybe that's why they're the franchise with this, right? Yeah. Anyway,
about the Bills.
You know, bringing back, I would love for them to bring in this guy, but they're not going to make a move. They've got their wide receivers. They're not going to make that move for Hopkins. But to bring Zeke back on a league minimum deal or something like that with probably some incentives thrown in there to make it look better than it is, I think that would be a good thing. I'd like to see him do that. That's what I got to say. I know, we'll keep it short and sweet. Are you okay with that, Jake?
CeeDee Lamb is a good dude. CeeDee Lamb, I think, is as a one in the league. But everything behind him now on that roster, like, I think Brandon Cooks is okay, but Brandon Cooks is just a walking injury to me ready to happen. If I could get DeAndre Hopkins, depending on what he's talking about money-wise, I think I'm going to have to kick the tires a little hard, and I feel like Dallas is either not doing or not letting on that they're doing. And sometimes you're doing it because you don't want to drive the price up by being thirsty out in public, right? Well, we want DeAndre Hopkins. We want DeAndre Hopkins. And then him and his agent, now that he's got one, is saying, oh, do you? Well, you keep talking like that, the price goes up, right? So I don't know if that's a smokescreen, right, at this point in time, but if they're in on it more than we think so. But you look at what teams are trying to do with these arms races. We're trying to get two really good wide receivers, not just depending on one, outside of the Kansas Cities with Mahomes and Kelsey. I just honestly, for the Cowboys, I feel like I don't know why you wouldn't do that unless he just wants so much crazy money that he blows up the potential extensions for Parsons and Diggs, right? So I think that's what they also are looking at. Is, you know, you got to extend those dudes. You got to extend those dudes. So I don't know what his price tag looks like, but I think for Dallas to pair him with CeeDee Lamb, man.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
And to me, there's some other teams that you wonder why, you know, I don't know if they're looking at them, but, you know, you look at a team like the Detroit Lions who are on the cusp of possibly winning the division this year. You know, do you go out and get another weapon like that to improve your chances of winning that division and maybe being the top five team in the NFC, right? You know, do you look at, do the 49ers look at them? I don't think the 49ers have the cap space, though, to look at them. You look at a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, who won AFC South, and last year, do they give Trevor Lawrence another weapon too? So, you know, there are teams out there. You have to wonder, do you go out and make a move for them? Yeah.
I want that to stay in the NFC. Do not go to the AFC, bro. You stay in the NFC and go over there. Stay that way. I am tired of this shit with the AFC. What is happening? Go to Dallas.
Hey, I take him in New Orleans.
Go to New Orleans.
3 years.
Hey. We're not going to have that kind of slander. Yeah.
Hey.
Stay in the NFC.
So what kind of money do you think he's going to – what kind of money do you think he's going to end up getting?
That's a great question. Because I feel like he can go somewhere shitty and get a lot of money, or he can say, hey – I'm DeAndre Hopkins. People have acknowledged me throughout the course of my career at points and times of being maybe the best wide receiver in the league, but I don't have a ring. We don't go deep in the playoffs. Do I take a little less money, right, and go to a Dallas knowing that they can't give me as much money as I would like because they got to pay Parsons and Diggs? But for me, I need Dallas to pay Parsons and Diggs, so if I'm on that team, we have a better chance to win. That's why I was like, I just don't know because it feels like it depends on what kind of decision he makes for himself in terms of is it just getting the bag or is it getting a little less money but playing in the playoffs and getting a ring? So that's a great question. I think it's only something he and his representation can answer, though. What's more important to you?
And here's the thing, you know, if Odell Beckham, I think, got somewhere between $16 and $18 million for a one-year deal and he's coming off a major ACL injury, so you got to think DeAndre Hopkins is looking at that as like the floor for what he's probably should be getting, right? So I think it's definitely a little bit somewhere north of that, with that being the floor. You look at teams right now with a lot of cap space. You look at the Bears right now, got over $32 million in cap space, right? You know, would he go there to help adjust the fields? I think
and
Carolina,
the winner of the division.
Carolina's got $27 million in cap space. I think they're probably where they are in their wide receiver room, so I don't think they will go after him. The Cardinals, of course, released them. They got $26 million. But here's another team, the Jets. Aaron Rodgers, he's still got $24 million in cap space. And do the Jets go after him, right? They could probably use another receiver.
But they got to extend 20 wins, though, right? So that's that piece of it.
Yeah, but you know how they structure these deals. Probably only 7 or 8 might be going toward the cap this year too. So I mean, the way they'll structure these deals, they'll backload it, right? And you know, I talked about the Lions already. They got $23 million. I don't see them going to the Colts. I mean, the Cowboys got $20 million in cap space right now too.
The Steelers, they're probably sitting in their wide receiver room. The Bengals got $14 million of cap space. I think the Bengals will sit in their wide receiver room. I mean, heck, the Saints got $14 million in cap space. And
how
even though we got Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, Mike Thomas, you know, like I said, hadn't played in 3 years. So, I mean, here's another team. The Patriots got $14 million in cap space. Another team that needs wide receivers. And the Browns, $13 million in cap space. Do you go out there and help Deshaun? I mean, they played together in Houston, right? So do you go after Hopkins to help the quarterback?
Ooh, I'd be so
the
mad.
Chargers,
I'd be so mad.
The Chargers, we throw around that contender term here again. The Chargers got $12 million in cap space, and their team is trying to take that next step. So the 49ers actually got more cap space than I thought. They got $10 million in cap space. So there's some team with money to spend. The Buccaneers have the – Buccaneers has the least amount of cap space in the league, but only $400,000.
Yeah, they are got that cap space money on their books, so they out.
And the Bills, a contender here, only have $1.4 million in cap space, so obviously they would have to restructure a lot of deals to make it happen.
Yeah,
a lot. So I like the table of the five rookies, Rob, if that's okay, because I think that's a lot to talk about. I do want to, we can bring it back next week, so hopefully you can keep that topic. There's a lot. We can spend another 20 minutes talking about that. We're getting close to the end here, only because we were talking so much about the Cowboys. I do want to mention a little bit about the Miami Heat and what's going on with that. And just a quick little side note, because there's two topics that, obviously about the culture with Pat Riley, Jimmy Butler, and talk about, how he said about, Bam Adebayo is going to be the reason they'll win. Good comments. But there was an interesting article that I stumbled upon. It was talking about Jokic, right? Believe it or not, Jokic came into the league right near the end of Tim Duncan's last year. I think Tim Duncan was like, they said he was 40, something like that. It was kind of interesting how he was 40 years old. Basically, he said he schooled him. That was his welcome to the NBA moment, getting schooled by a 40-year-old like Tim Duncan, right? But this dude was like, just, he took me to school, right? Working me, right? He said he had like 20-something points and like 25 points, something crazy like that. He just looked like he was like, it was automatic. And so it's interesting how that long ago, that was Tim Duncan's last season. That's whenever Jokic was getting in. And now he's kind of evolving and stuff like that, too. So it was a great article. I have to send it to you guys because it kind of shows you how, Jokic now being the guy that's kind of like schooling people, but it took him kind of seeing that and kind of getting in the lead to kind of say, oh, this is how a real professional plays, or these are some things I can take from, or these are some things I'm getting schooled. And we've all seen that from Shaq and, the Dream, and everyone's gone through that welcome to the NBA moment. But it was interesting how that was the last, like, season of Tim Duncan and how he was entering. You're like, man, this guy was the truth, and he was like, one of the greatest power forwards in the game, just basically taking him through the woodshed, So I thought that was great, man, so.
Yeah, this series is wild. You gotta give Coach Spoh a lot of credit for benching Caleb Martin. They said he was sick. No, he was sick with sucking. And they put in Kevin Love and turned him in the starting lineup because Aaron Gordon was just going bananas on the post on those smaller guards. And starting Kevin Love in that starting lineup was, to me, was the right move. And you gotta know that Coach Spoh and Pat Riley are gonna get in the lab, right, and figure some stuff out. Jokic is just on another level, but it's terrible that you have to take the blueprint and say, I'm just going to let this dude get all the points as long as nobody else gets going. The problem with that is that Jamal Murray just didn't have a Jamal Murray-type game. I think Jamal Murray can still get his own buckets while Jokic is still on fire. You know what I mean? Like, he can be going to the hole, and they can double him. You can give it to Murray. He can go get his own shot. And you can look up at one point and have Jokic with 30-something points and Murray with, like, 25. And he's just asking the other dudes to do the bare minimum. So Miami still has to be careful with that. The matchup zones they're dropping into here and there throughout the game definitely gave Denver some problems. Michael Porter Jr. was trash. And I told people I was watching, I would punch Michael Porter Jr. in the back. I would punch him in the back. Every time he went past, I'd go, pow. Like, I'm going to see how good that back really is. Like, not punch him for real. But, like, I'm going to test that back to make sure that it's good. So it's some of these storylines still going. Tyler Hero's not going to play now in game three. But you know that the role players always play better at home. So do you get a Caleb Martin game where he goes for 15 points off the bench? The Struces, the Vincents of the world. KCP and Porter didn't do what they needed to do in game two. And that's why the Jokic's assist totals were down, because they missed wide open shots. So to me, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in this game three, the role players. Because, you know, for the most part, what you're going to get from Murray, what you're going to get from Jokic. Bam is playing phenomenal. He's picking up some of the slack for Jimmy Butler. You guys feel like Jimmy Butler's going to play better at home. But which of those bench players come out and play? Does Aaron Gordon play like that in Miami? You know what I mean? Like, he played great beating out the crowd in Denver. Could he take that to Miami? So this has been a really interesting series. I'm glad Miami won the game so we have a series to talk about. I don't want it to be 2-0 and feel like, you know, it's just a foregone conclusion that Denver's going to win it.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I don't really have a dog in the fight in this finals. You know, just happy that the Warriors and Celtics are both going. And so, you know, and so, but I am hoping for a really good series, right? And so it was nice that we have, so far we got a series. It's 1-1. We got at least five games out of it here. You know, a couple of interesting things for me in this series so far is when you look at the Miami team, Butler and Martin were the best two players for the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. And they have, neither one of them have showed up in these first two games, and yet they're in the series 1-1. Now, Butler did show up in the fourth quarter of game two, right? And he's showing up on a defensive end. Actually did a phenomenal job on Jamal Murray in game two and held them under 20 points, right? So that's the interesting thing for me with the Miami Heat. And, you know, I didn't really – I'm not saying Miami's going to win this series, but I wasn't the one that was saying it was going to be a sweep or a 4-1. I was like, hey, you guys got to look at this. Like, Miami Heat, they already knocked out two title contenders. They knocked out the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round, 4-1. They knocked out the Celtics, 4-3. Even though they lost three in a row to the Celtics, they still held on to win that series. So, I mean, you can't tell me that they're going to be a cakewalk in these NBA finals, right? They're a tough physical team. They're well-coached. They got a great organization with a great culture going back to the Tim Hardaway, Alonzo Mourning days in the 90s. They're going to bring a certain physicality to this series. Like I say, I'm not predicting they're going to win the series, but I wasn't one of those that thought it was going to be an easy cakewalk for the Denver Nuggets, because you just got to look at who they have already beaten to get to where they are here in this NBA final. So, yeah, that's what's going to be interesting to me, if they can find a way to get Jimmy Butler and Martin going offensively. And if they do, that could be really scary for Denver. Now, Mike Malone, I think he's definitely going to make some adjustments to get Jamal Murray going, too. He's going to run him off more screens. They got to free him up a little bit more to get some open shots. I think he finished game two with only 18 points. I think the bar for
him. But he got hot in the fourth quarter, though.
Yeah. So if Jokic is scoring more than 30 points and Murray is scoring at least 22 or 23, I still think Denver is going to be tough to beat. Now, you know, Murray only had 18 in game two. They did a phenomenal job defending him and rotating to him in this past game and getting hands in his face. So we'll see. But I think Malone is going to make some – I think Malone's going to try to get Murray going. And I think you're going to see Spo try to get Butler and find a way to get Martin back in this series too.
Well, the one thing I would say is, you know, Pat Riley, you know, the culture in Miami is just – it's winning. You know, he's brought in this Spoelstra young coach, good coach, and smart.
Mm-hmm.
He knows when to call the timeouts. Could you please call Mike McCarthy and help him out? But, you know, he's that guy that, you know, he's just got a winning attitude. He's that coach that, you know, when he calls a timeout, you see some teams, and my team's one of them, where they call a timeout and nothing's come of it. It doesn't even seem like they've had any real plan, you know. And every one of the timeouts that the Heat take, it seems like they come out and they're doing something really special. You know, they're making the play that they need to make. So they're a smart coach basketball team. I've got, in this series, I have Denver winning the series in six. But it's not, it wouldn't surprise me because the X factor is Murray on Denver. And if Butler can do his thing on Murray, the Heat will win the series. I don't think that's going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if Butler had that last real push in his career to get this ring and to shut one of their second best player on the team down. If they do that, then they can win. I don't think he's going to shut Murray down completely. Like you said before, if the Joker gets, 30, 35 points, Murray's only got to get 20, 25 points, and they're in really good shape with their role players and this sort of thing. But it's interesting, and I'm really glad that it's 1-1. Because this is a series. And you know, Robin, you reminded me of the two teams, because it just went over my head, the two teams that they beat, to get where they're at, Wow.
Absolutely. JQ made a good point about
they're going to compete every game. Both teams are going to compete.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're going to
compete.
And it's going to be just a difference of just a few plays here and there late in those fourth quarters, probably all the games, which is exciting for us fans. I don't have a dog in the race either, but I'll tell you what, it's NBA action and it's a good series. So
it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. That's right. Two basic
factors. Absolutely.
To me, it's like a Porter Jr. Because you know what you're going to get from Joker and Murray. I feel like with Michael Porter Jr., with his length, his size, blocking shots, when they drop into that 2-3 zone and they say, hey, we're going to try to take them away, and they rotate it to him and he's able to knock down those shots, it puts so much more pressure on the Miami defense and the offense to keep up. But when he has a game like in game two, he can't do that again for Denver to win the series. He's going to have to be the dude he was in the regular season for them to win this series. To me, the X factor is Michael Porter Jr.
And you mentioned that Spoelstra had a quick leash on Caleb Martin and he made the switch to Kevin Love. I look for the same with Michael Porter Jr. here for Denver Nuggets. If he's not performing, I think Mike Malone's going to have a quick leash and he's going to have to do something else with the rotation. And
probably
he can go small with a Bruce Brown, et cetera, something like that. But they're going to he's going to be on a short leash if he's not playing at a high level. I think Mike Malone and that staff is already coming up with a strategy to see what they need to do if Michael Porter Jr. is not playing like the way he's capable of. And he's going to have to match Miami Heat's physicality, which he did not in game two. He was extremely soft for a guy his size. He played extremely soft. And, Miami Heat has got a bunch of guys on that team that are undrafted. And those guys are hungry, man. They had to work hard to get where they are. And so they're going to come after it. But, ladies and gentlemen, you guys hear the music. That's the end of our live portion of the show on tonight. We're going to be back at you on next Tuesday night. Next Tuesday night, it's going to be 11 p.m. Eastern on the East Coast. Hey, Miami and Florida. You got the Miami Heat in NBA Finals. You got the Florida Panthers and the NHL Stanley Cup Finals.
They're getting their ass whooped by Vegas, though. Ooh, Jesus.
They are. They are. So we got the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals. It's like the Mountain West against the Miami area. With Las Vegas and Denver going up against Miami here. So Miami, we want to hear from y'all next week, 11 p.m. Eastern, Central Time Zone, New Orleans, Chicago. It's going to be 10 p.m. Hey, Denver, Salt Lake, 9 p.m. Las Vegas, Los Angeles, it's going to be 8 p.m. for you all. Tune in on next Tuesday night. It might be.
Hey, Isaiah Rogers, you cannot bet on your own team game. What are you doing, bro? What is wrong with you? You can't bet on close games? First of all, you can't bet on no game.
Can't bet.
But you definitely can't. Look here, Black Pete Rose. You can't bet on your own team? What is wrong with you?
I do the Black Pete Rose.
That is the dumbest shit ever. I don't understand that, bro. 25, 50 bucks at a time, when you make hundreds of thousands of dollars, that is so, so dumb. I just had to get that in there because I read that today, and I was like, wow, bro, you have a problem. You need to call the hotline and get some help. You jeopardize the NFL contract for $25 bet.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad that we have Brussels sprouts as our sponsor, so I want to give a shout-out. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Was that asparagus? Oh, okay. Asparagus. Sorry, asparagus.
You're going to lose our only sponsor, Gary.
Yeah, come on, man. Sponsored by nobody. Sorry, too much inside the NBA for me.
I'm sorry, I just had to do that.
Great, Andre. You don't look like you're happy with us, bro.
I got nothing now. Whatever y'all want to say, wrap it up. And I don't know if we're going to do like a quick wrap up for OC or not. So y'all can do your thing and wrap it up, man. So go ahead.
Yes, we are. I'll start it off with, come on, PGA Tour. Do you know how mad you got to be if you wanted to do to say, yeah, PGA Tour, I'll stand with you. You're the PGA Tour. We do what we do over here. We ain't going to live golf. We ain't going to take that money with the Saudis and this, that, and the other. And then, what is it? Has it been 2 years? 3 years? 3 years tops. Now they all are unifying and everybody's bringing that money back in. But if you were the PGA golfer and you left to go to the live tour in those 2 or 3 years, you would have made bank. And then you would have came back and got the same bank what they had when it now unifying it. Now all the dudes that stay with the PGA tour watching these dudes getting paid most of $1 million to go play in these golf court tournaments and only playing 54 holes and having to wear shorts and all this other stuff, they banked all that money these 3 years, and now we've come together in this short of the time. Listen, if I was Rory McIlroy and all them other dudes on the PGA Tour, I would be hot because I could have made that money and still been back in the same place 3 years later.
So they got nothing
terrible
for their loyalty.
Not a damn thing.
Donald Trump's making money off of that, too.
Yep.
Talking about, get the hell out of here. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, my last topic will be the SEC football schedule. They decided the first year of Texas and Oklahoma, which will be not this coming college football season, but 2024, they're going to be moving to 16 teams. But they decided to stay at an 8-game conference schedule. I'm kind of on the fence on with this one, but the Big Ten.
You're not on the goddamn fence.
The Big
Ten.
You're
not on the fence. You love
it. I'm not buying that.
Yeah, he ain't on the damn fence. He loves it.
No, hear me out here.
Okay,
I'm actually, I'm calling the SEC out on this one. Actually, The Big Ten is going to have 16 teams in 2024, and they're playing a 9-game schedule. The Big 12 is going to have 12 teams, and they're playing a 9-game schedule. The Pac-12 will have 10 teams, and they're still going to be called the Pac-12, but they're only going to have 10 teams in 2024, and they're playing a 9-game schedule. So the Big Bang SEC, yes, they're playing a 9-game schedule. Every team will play everybody in the Pac-12 in 2024.
So they only going to have one cupcake and then play a 9-game conference schedule?
Who's that?
Oh, no. Sorry, great. You're right. No, they're going to have a cupcake. Yeah. You're right. Sorry, great.
Yeah. So you got the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Pac-12 playing a 9-game schedule, and the SEC is going to play 8. Only 5 of the 16 teams in the conference voted to play a 9-game schedule. Of course, kudos to LSU. They voted for a 9-game schedule. Scary Nicky Saban was one of the ones who didn't want to play the 9-game schedule, voted against it, because you don't want to play Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU all in 1 year. But you're already doing that, Nick. You're already doing it with 8.
No, He wants to play Chattanooga Community College.
Yeah. Chattanooga, Tennessee.
No,
hey, they're playing Chestnut Checkers in the SEC.
Yeah. Now, don't get it. You know, the SEC has benefited from this. There's no doubt about it. They won the last four championships. Three different schools have won the last four titles in the SEC. So they've benefited from the schedule. So the conference is challenging each team to play one powerhouse non-conference game in addition to the eight-game schedule. If y'all want to play three cupcakes, but you got to have at least one powerhouse non-conference opponent. So that's what the SEC is charging them to do. Now, this is just for the 2024 season. They're not going to have a West and East anymore. They're putting all 16 teams in one big division. And the two highest-ranked teams will play for the conference championship. Not the two teams with the best conference record, but the two highest-ranked teams will play for the conference championship. So it's really interesting on this. And the reason why I say I was on the fence, I'm actually in favor of the nine-game schedule. I think the SEC will get more money if they go to a nine-game conference schedule, number one. And but only five teams were in favor of it right now, which was really interesting to me. You know, LSU, Georgia, Texas A&M, Missouri, and I can't remember who the 15 was, but only five teams voted for the nine-game schedule. But if the Pac-12 doing it with only 10 teams in the conference, SEC with 16, you should be playing a nine-game schedule. I'm sorry.
Shit me. The SEC said, man, we're going to get two teams in here right now. We're going to beat up on each other in that ninth game.
SEC may get four teams in the 12-team playoff.
That's right. Going to 12-team, yeah. Yeah.
They could get four teams.
Yeah. Chestnut Checkers.
Mm-hmm. Easily four teams. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot the expansion. I'm sorry, Gary. Go ahead, man.
No, I was agreeing with that. I can see that happening as well. I mean, they've won the last 4 years, you know, right? 4 years or 3 years? 3 years?
That's 4 years. LSU, Alabama, Georgia, the last two.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so three teams, because Georgia won it back-to-back, right? Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yes, unfortunately.
I mean, they're just that conference is just that good. So if they go to eight, I can see them with four.
You got to stop with the cupcake hating, because the cupcake, I can play Alabama and I can get $300,000, man. So I'm in, man. I can go get my ass kicked for $350,000, man. Or
more than $300,000.
More
like a million.
I'm just saying, you know, just whatever. You know, you can – whatever you want to attach to that number, you can go – because of now the new realignments and whatnot, now I can get even more money. So, like, hey, I'm cool with that if I'm a cupcake.
Yep.
So, hey, kids. We're gonna get an ass kicked, but we get the check. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
Out of the five
conferences, ACC and SEC, the only ones still playing eight games. Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, nine. Nick Saban would rather play Gary Schaefer State than play another SEC team.
Yeah, and that'd be a big loss for him too.
Give me
a G. Goodness. Oh my goodness. Okay. You gotta wrap it up, Dre. We done.
See you guys next week. Be good, gentlemen. Be fun. Talk to you next week.
All right, Dre.
Peace out, gentlemen.
Good night.
Yep.
Good night, gentlemen.